Hello, I'm Preston Schlunkover. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio, where we discuss all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disasters might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. Well, we're back with Rich Breen. We're going to be talking about our second part of the Russian attacks on the Ukrainian power grid. So a little bit about Rich again is he's a retired special agent with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, OSI. He is also a business owner and a cyber company owner with commercial and government contracts. So we left off last time. We were getting ready to talk about the five-pronged attack on the Ukrainian grid. And so, Rich, welcome back to Civil Defense Radio.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's always good to have you here. I learned so much when you talk about this cyber stuff, because I'm not technical, and you know, but I understand what you're saying, because you make it so easy. I've had conversations with people that, you know, that were telling me about different things on as far as cyber, and my eyes roll over because I'm trying to understand, but it's just not getting there. But I'm glad you're back, and I really want to know more about how they attacked the Ukrainian power grid, and you know, because me and a whole bunch of friends of mine who are very knowledgeable of this, they look at this as a serious threat to America, especially with some of the things that we're discovering with the extra high power transformers that are coming out of China and being put into our local electrical grid. And many of those have things in them that shouldn't be there and give access to the Chinese to mess around. So, I mean, for the last 10 years, I guess, we've been taking these components into our power grid, not suspecting the backdoor access that is there. And so we've got a lot of problems, and you know, this cyber aspect, this is part of the threat that we need to really be aware of, especially going towards the election and the potential that China wants to play hardball to make sure that they get the president of their choice.
Yeah, and that's always a big thing as far as that goes. All of our adversaries, and this is something that everybody needs to take in mind, all of our adversaries are playing these little games all the time. For instance, the DoD is hit hundreds and thousands of times every day with cyber attacks, be it a low-level attack or whatever, and all of these are really kind of testing the system.
Right.
And as we talked about in the last episode, with the first Ukraine attack that happened on the 23rd of December in 2015, the hackers really focused really heavily on three of the 24 stations, if you will, or regions. And then in that, there was actually 30 substations that they took, and they knocked out power for about, again, depending on who you listen to, 200,000 to 250,000 to 300,000 people. Lost power for several hours. It may not sound that significant, but it is significant because of the way that the attack played out. And like you talked about, where we left off last time was what I was calling the five-pronged attack for how this took place. The first thing that they did was they manipulated the breakers that controlled the power. They didn't really need malicious code for this because, again, they had gained access into the system. They simply just logged in as the operators, issued the commands, and the system did what the commands are there designed to do. We know this happened because a Ukrainian employee had recorded a video with his iPhone, actually, showing the mouse cursor on his computer going all over the place, and he was not even controlling it.
Wow.
So that right there is a good clue in my line of work that, hey, something's going on, and I'm not in control of this system.
Yeah.
The other part of the attack, or you know, the second prong would be that they targeted the backup power system. Well, why is that important? What's called the uninterruptible power supply, or UPS power supply. Mm-hmm. If I take down your system and you have no backup, the power generators aren't going to kick in, and you're not going to be able to, continue to power that critical component of the electrical system.
Right. So everything goes dark, right?
Right. So everything goes dark for whatever period of time.
Right.
And so you can restore that power back to that component. The third prong was the hackers actually. Now they are using the malicious code because, again, they've got free reign, as we talked about in the last segment, of the system. And they knew that their code was only going to be good for a little bit of time before the Ukrainian power companies realize I have a problem, and they can shut down power and do a bunch of other things internally to stop the attack. So what they did is the hackers focused on what's called a serial to Ethernet converter. What that did is it pretty much allow the hackers to devise a way of replacing the code that makes the converters useless. So if you go to try to hit that to try to divert the attack or have power go from one system to another and still keep the lights on, you've now made that converter useless, is what they did. That was very interesting because we had not, up until that point, hadn't really seen that really play out from a cyber attack perspective.
Right.
The fourth prong was they knew that when the lights go out, consumers and customers are going to start calling the power company like, hey, my lights are out. What's going on? So they, in conjunction to launching this thing on the 23rd, did a telephone denial of service attack. They basically overloaded the phone system. So the calls from the customers couldn't get to the power supply or the electrical companies to say, hey, I have a problem. So from the inside, if I'm inside the power company, I'm not getting those warning calls from my consumer saying, my lights are out, something's wrong. So that allowed them a little bit more time to, go through with the attack. The fifth or the final prong that the hackers did is they released a malicious code called Kill Disk. This was aimed directly at the master boot record. Mm-hmm. Which is basically a critical component within the computer hard drive that enables it to properly start back up and function again.
Okay.
We have seen this before because Iran and North Korea had used this technique in the past to wipe out hard drives and do that, that stuff. So a lot of what I just described in this part of this show and in the last show as well is everything we've seen up to this point. There's really nothing out of the ordinary that from a cyber attack. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but they've used a lot of stuff that, again, that's out there and has been out in the wild, so to speak, for a while. Mm-hmm. The attack, like I said, they actually launched this thing at 3:30 in the afternoon. That seemed like the right time for them on the 23rd. And like I said, they opened up all the breakers on 30 some substations, distribution substations. And pretty much the whole western region of Ukraine was without power for about 6 hours. And it took the Ukrainian power company about a year, just over a year, to restore everything back to what was normal operations before the attack.
Oh, wow.
So while you lost power for and some revenue and all the stuff that kind of goes with that for 6 hours, it still took a team of investigators and cyber folks to go back in for about a year to put everything back and make sure you close those holes so they couldn't do that attack again. Mm-hmm. So that's how that attack took place. And then the next attack that we'll get into is the Ukraine attack on December 17th, 2016, a year later. That one was a lot different for a lot of different reasons that we can talk about as well.
Yeah. While you were talking about this, I remembered that about that same time frame, I believe there was an upstate New York power plant that had an attack on it. I don't remember if it was Russian or Chinese or who, but they were trying to open up the floodgates on the dam. Do you remember that?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, it was about that same time frame, if I remember right, because it was. I had just retired then, and that was during a time when I was doing a lot of research, putting together my civil defense strategy. But I think it was about that time. But anyway, so we've had some attacks here that have shown that they could cause a lot of damage too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the 2016 Ukrainian attack, I don't remember too much news about that one. I think the initial one was more widely reported, maybe not. But can you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about that one? How that one came about and how it was different than the first one?
Yeah, it was different for several reasons, and a lot of has to do with, again, I think we talked about this in the last show as well. Is you got to look at when the sabotage took place and the cyber attack took place. Even the 16 attack, you got to kind of look at Ukraine and what's going on. You had the political revolution in Kiev. You had Russia annexing Crimea. You had military clashes throughout a couple of the regions in the eastern part of Ukraine. So there's a lot of upheaval going there. And again, 2016 here in America was a presidential election year. So with all of these other news stories, the 16 attack kind of got lost a little bit more in the ash heaps of all the media stuff out there. But also, a lot still has not been released on the 16 attack, because what we just described in the 15 attack was a total different game a year later. Wow. And it looks like it was kind of by the same folks. So to quickly go into that one a little bit for your audience, that attack, like I said, happened on December 17th, 2016. The blackout occurred primarily in Kiev. One of the substation failed, and there was about 3 million, because that's the capital, about 3 million people lost power for a significant period of time. Uh-huh. The initial investigation started kind of very similar to the way the 15 attack occurred. And for your listeners who remember, when we walked through the cyber kill chain, there was a lot of reconnaissance done, but there's still so much not known about this attack publicly. The hackers, once again, we know they used malicious code. This code was a whole lot more sophisticated than what we saw in the 2015 attack. This attack showed that the code was able to do more on its own, meaning I didn't have to sit there and keep programming things. This had a little bit of, one would speculate, a little bit of artificial intelligence built into the code. So the code would kind of replicate and do and kind of go through the system on its own. Again, a little different, or a lot different than 15, but not really anything that we haven't really seen from a cyber attack before. But that's definitely unique to the 16 attack. When the investigators actually look back on this one as well, one of the, I forgot the investigating company that did this, but they looked at the attack, and basically what this thing did is, everything comes with a name with some of these things. So they call this attack crash override.
Okay.
Simply because the word crash appeared a lot in the malicious code, because they were trying to crash the systems in order to do that. Where in the 15 attack, it was more of, can I just disable it and see what I can see kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So this code would allow the ability to override what's called key industrial control system protocols. So again, and if you've got code that's in the wild, that's in your system, that can replicate and go and do these things on its own without me as a hacker having to be in that environment, that's pretty significant. So one of the other things, along with giving this thing a name and seeing that the word crash was a lot of the word, I guess, was written a lot in the code, there were two pieces of malicious code that seemed to really kind of take hold. One was called HAVEX, which is an espionage tool. It is believed to be a Russian tool used to spy specifically on industrial sites around the globe, where they prey very widely on the protocol systems, or what's called open platform communications, which those components are used to share information between other components in that. And what happened was the crash override code embedded itself into that and made it look like it was that open platform communication, that OPC code, or in those protocols. And from that, they were able to map the networks within the substations as well. The other unique malicious code that was in there is something that is called Black Energy 2. It's malicious code that could spy on the interfaces that operators use for critical infrastructure. And those are frequently used to control systems. So I've got two malicious codes that are doing its own thing within the system. Again, if you know, for those who listened to the last show, we didn't see this in 15. So this makes it very unique as well. Crash Override was not oriented to really collect information because it is speculated that the same hackers who did this did the 15 attack. So if you go back to the 15 attack, you already knew enough of what was going on within the supply companies in Ukraine. So instead, their software has several features that work together to serve different purposes, mainly simply to just attack. Right. One of the first things they did, they had a component. The first component was a launcher, which is basically a code that is loaded onto a target machine to prepare for the attack for a specified time and run for however many hours or minutes that you need it to do. And then the second component is then activated after that. Another thing that we saw was something called a data wiper that overrides critical data in the vital portion of a computer. It erases configuration files. It basically prevented the Ukrainian workers from remotely monitoring. And for good measure, the data wiper actually erased a bunch of Windows files on their computers and made the computers pretty much unsafe. The hackers then used another variety of ways that they can damage the systems and protocols by just turning on, on and off switches. That was done. And the launch, the hackers really, they targeted systems and then provided some infrastructure, some instructions as they needed to. In this attack, it really showed that the code could identify and manipulate the system again on its own. And that made this attack very unique. And really, it's probably why we haven't heard a lot about this, because it's really hard to go back in line by line in a computer networked system and then see what code has actually now been infected or changed or altered. So again, a lot different than the 15 attack. Investigators also believe in this one that the attack had really kind of rushed to restore manual Ukrainians rushed to store manual operations on this without really understanding the functional relays and the way the surge and the way that the hackers actually did this. This may have also made it last a little longer. And this attack, because of the sophistication, I would almost say this would be a good test case, a little bit of what I could do in the future to make an even more devastating attack. But right. Again, you impacted more people with this attack, and you definitely showed a whole lot more sophistication in just over just under a year of your first attack.
Okay.
So very, 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 very unique attacks, but both were very effective in the fact that they were able to get in, own the system, and cause some destruction and cause some outages, which, again, from a power station perspective, that's pretty key.
Okay. So the operators in the 16 attack tried to do the countermeasures that they did in the 15 attack, but it didn't work. It just made it last longer.
A little bit. Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like. And again, I think probably I would guess we're going to start seeing some more information come out on the 16 attack. There's been some stories, and anybody can go online and kind of look at those. You had plugged a book in the last show that we did. I'll plug one here. I normally don't do this, but this book really kind of goes into what I just described, and it really kind of lays out for a reader how cyber attacks are done and how they're used in the geopolitical game. And the name of the book is called The Hacker in the State. It's written by Ben Buchanan, and it came out earlier this year in 2020. Very, very good book. Again, I normally don't recommend it, but to kind of go what you said, try to make all the technical stuff make a little bit of sense and put it in layman's terms so it's easier to understand. This book did a really, really good job of that and kind of walks you through. And both of these attacks are in that book. And then Ben actually gives some other examples of stuff as well with stuff Stuxnet and some of the other stuff.
Okay, so, what's his name again?
Ben Buchanan. And I'll send you the link as well.
Okay, Ben, you owe us $100. Some friends of mine do that whenever they mention the name of one of these podcast gurus out there, or a product that that they use or they would like to have or whatever. They always say $100 to whoever, and so I figured, well, why not? $100, Ben.
Hey, if it works, we'll go out to dinner on Ben.
Okay. Yeah. But no, that's good. So you already covered a little bit of the geopolitical environment, but is there anything else you wanted to cover on that aspect?
No, I think that's pretty much it. I know that if you look at this, governments and some cybersecurity companies that have looked at these, hacks, the sophistication and everything that really kind of comes into this, it's very highly suspected that this was Russian groups, and Russian hacking groups have a very long history of participating in for political and military conflicts within Eastern Europe and around the globe. So we know there's a state tie to the hacking groups.
Mm-hmm.
You had mentioned China as well. China's another nation state that has direct ties to hacker groups who go out and do the bidding for that nation state.
Mm-hmm.
So, one would have to ask, okay, again, yes, it's Ukraine, it's not the US, but was Russia really kind of looking at what can I do for some other attack in the future? As we've talked about in this show and the last show, I would say yes, because this is a very good way of testing your software and unleashing some of your cyber tool or cyber attack tools into the wild. The only thing that does from a hacking perspective is once I unleash that malicious code, it's gone. I can't use that tool again. Kind of like dropping a bomb on a target. I don't get the bomb back and can drop it again.
Right.
So once that hacking tool or that malicious code has been used, it's forever out there. And then from an investigative perspective, once we understand what it is, what the code was, and what they were trying to do, then you can do the countermeasures to kind of go against those if they're ever used again. So the interesting part with these two attacks is it does look like there's some similarities between the two because of some of the early ways that the 16 attack took place.
Right.
In
the time frame.
Right. So that also goes back into, again, is this really a Russian group? And then where do you kind of go from there? So.
Yeah. So what you were saying about the code, once it's out there, it's out there. It's like Stuxnet. You can't do a Stuxnet again because everybody knows about it.
Right. Well, you can't use the exact code. You can try to modify it and do some other little tweaks to it, which people do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to necessarily. Excuse me. What made Stuxnet very interesting is it made the centrifuges in the Iranian nuclear facilities spin out of control.
Yeah.
So if I use that code as a basis, could I make it do something else? So one could speculate I could take that code as a base code and then add some other features to it and then make a new cyber weapon.
Uh-huh.
That does happen more often than not. I'll say it that way.
Okay. Now, there's you said that there was evidence that Russia was behind the attacks, and that's a still speculation for the most part. Is that what you're saying, or is that more confirmed?
Yeah. Well, the 15 attack, the Ukrainians and some U.S. officials looked into those attacks really hard. And I think SANS has a report out on the web that your listeners can download as well, and they'll give a little bit details on this also. But the Ukrainian investigators, they've stated that the attacks, because the attackers spoke Russian, as I said, the one attacker even claimed to be from a Russian state-sponsored group that's called...
For notoriety, huh?
Right. It's called App 28 or Advanced Persistent Threat 28. It's also got a code name called Fancy Bear, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
And those guys are known, highly thought or known to have ties with the Russian government. And they've got a history of doing high profile attacks. And App 28 has done those against the Pakistani military. They've done it against the Ukrainian Election Commission, actually. And there's some speculation that they may have been involved in the DNC attacks here in the U.S. as well. Mm. There's some other indications because of the 16 attack that there's another team out there called Sandworm. That's another Russian state-sponsored hacking group that has targeted NATO, some industrial control systems, and have been very active since about mid-2000s. And they've been suspected of developing the black energy malware and some of the stuff like that, which is very similar to some of the malware that was done in these attacks and in the Ukrainian cyber attacks. So because of that, one can speculate, you know, with a little bit of a surety that, you know, Russia may have had some hands in that one. And Sandworm team is also believed to have developed a thing called NotPetya. I think is how you say that. It's a ransomware that's caused billions of dollars of damages pretty much around the world, and a lot of those to some U.S. businesses and stuff as well. So because of similarities in the way that these groups have attacked other entities and organizations and businesses and it looks like it's one of those two groups, and Russia's definitely behind it. So I think it's safe to say that. And you got to, again, go back and look at what was going on in Eastern Europe, and Russia was causing some havoc in Ukraine anyway. So you put all those together, it definitely looks very, very good that Russia was behind this one.
Yeah.
Or both of these attacks.
Yeah. The more I learn about this, the more I realize that it seems like the cyber environment, the cyber warfare aspect of this geopolitical dance, you know, between war and peace, it is almost the perfect weapon, because you're not putting forces out there, you're sending out code, and you're getting into things, and you're causing havoc. Whereas if it was, you know, force on force, then it's a lot more dynamic and more kinetic than what this cyber environment is.
Right. Cyber is definitely going to play a lot more on the non-kinetic side. Again, because I'm not dropping bombs, and it's a little harder to do battle, you know, damage assessments and that kind of stuff, because and a lot of this stuff is happening behind the scenes. So yeah. and it's not getting the notoriety and the publicity and stuff that's, you know, if we drop a bomb, that's going to get a lot of attention. If you launch a cyber attack against, in this case, two power stations, you're going to get a little bit of attention because the lights went out. But those guys, especially in the 15 attack, they were in that system for a very long time.
Yeah.
And nobody even knew they were there. So,
well, I'm gonna give Ted Koppel another shout out. $100, Ted. In Lights Out, he talks about these cyber threats and how Russia and China and North Korea and possibly Iran have been in our grid doing this reconnaissance for quite some time. And, you know, they have the same equipment that we do, because we developed all these systems, these SCADA systems that everybody around the world is using. So there's a flaw there. You know, we don't have anything different except our protocols. That's about the only way to keep these things from happening, isn't it? To have certain protocols that help us to protect our grid and our infrastructure.
It's that, and having a very active cybersecurity team that's looking into this. And, you know, I'm a former CI guy, so I think having a counterintelligence piece to this as well, to understand what the threats are and what to look out for, combining that is what it's going to take in order to give some higher level of assurity that our power stations and our grid across the U.S., our grid system, isn't going to be hacked and exploited and attacked, and then people are going to be without power or worse. So I think it's going to take all of that. And it's going to also take a collective desire by our political officials to actually want to do something about this, because these two attacks should really be a warning sign as to this is possible. It's not Hollywood anymore. And this is something this, from a nation state perspective, this would be a nice way to mess things up a little bit. And then put a country in a situation that I want you in versus what you want in.
Yeah.
Let's get that way.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. There's, if you want to put somebody under duress, take out their power. Just like the Ukrainians. That's what you do. And, unfortunately we, through our own lackadaisical attitudes to some degree and our politicians, we've created an environment that is, rich for our potential adversaries. And that's why we've got so many things going on right now too many people with the ability to make change have not made change or committed to making change. So that's unfortunate. The president has put out two executive orders on cyber. The Russians, Chinese, Iranians, and North Koreans, they all see EMP as a cyber weapon because it kills machinery and not people. So at least right away. So they see it as a new form of warfare that is a step lower than actual nuclear exchange. So we've got threats out there that a lot of people don't realize, and it's a world that is fast changing, and not only is it changing geopolitically, but our world is changing here in the streets with this insurgence or insurgency that's taken place with the neo-Marxists in this country. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And our YouTube site at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And you can find all of our posts and shows there. I wish to thank Rich again for this visit to Civil Defense Radio, and to thank you, our friends and listeners, who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.